The following message is from Jeff Shreve, pastor of First Baptist Church, Texarkana, Texas, and From His Heart Ministries.
Well, this has been Family Day, and we were excited to baptize six and to dedicate nine families, nine little ones, and brothers and sisters and moms and dads. We always call that parent-baby dedication because it's really a dedication of the parents to raise up their children in the fear and the admonition and discipline of the Lord. And tonight we finish out Family Day with the movie The Father Effect. I can't encourage you strongly enough to be here. You will really be impacted by the movie. But right now, Debbie and I want to talk about marriage and family. You know, marriage is one of those things that designed by God, marriage and family, to be a great blessing in our lives. That's why when you go to a wedding ceremony, it's a celebration. And there is clapping, and there is a reception afterward, and everybody, you know, I now pronounce you husband and wife. Let me introduce to you for the very first time, Mr. and Mrs. So-and-so. We had a guy on our staff some time ago, and he was doing a wedding, and he closed his book. He was ready to pronounce them husband and wife and introduce them for the very first time, and he forgot their names. Preacher's worst nightmare. And the dramatic pause became a pregnant pause, and I leaned over to Debbie and I said, he forgot their names. And he was praying, come Lord Jesus, or at least give me their names. And finally it came to him, and he got out of that. But it's always something exciting. But here's the bad part. The tragic news is we go from a celebration, we go from throwing the bouquet to throwing in the towel so often. What happened? I mean, we had big plans. This was going to be great. And you go into marriage thinking it's the ideal, but then you hit some rough waters, and the ideal can become an ordeal, and the ordeal can lead you to want a new deal. Maybe you are sitting here and you say, that describes my marriage, and what do I do? Maybe you're saying, hey, I'm not married, but I want to get married someday, but I don't want to get that. I don't want to have that happen. So how do I prevent that from happening? What do I do in marriage? Well, in the book, The Song of Solomon, or it's also called in some versions, The Song of Songs, Solomon wrote this book early in his life. You know, Solomon was the king that God gave wisdom and knowledge like the breath of the sea. And he wrote 3,000 proverbs and 1,005 songs. And this was his number one hit, his Song of Songs. And it's a back and forth between his bride, the Shulamite bride, and Solomon and his bride are talking back and forth. And in chapter 2, verse 15, she says this to him, catch for us the foxes, the little foxes that are ruining the vineyards while our vineyards are in blossom. She's talking about their love and their marriage, and she said, Solomon, I need you to take the lead, and I need you to catch those foxes that will chew up our love. Warren Wiersbe, in his commentary, he says, asks this question, so what are the little foxes that ruin the vineyard? They're the little things that quietly destroy relationships.
Well, those foxes, we know what foxes are, right? I mean, most of us have heard that expression, sly as a fox. So we know some of the characteristics of a fox are that they're sly, they're kind of sneaky, they're subtle. But one thing we may not all know about a fox is that they're normally fairly small. They usually only get to be about 10 to 15 pounds. And so they're not real big creatures, because that verse doesn't talk about, you know, a huge pig that you need to watch after that weighs 200 pounds or a rhinoceros. It talks about these little bitty things. And there's two interesting words in that passage. The first one is that word little, which means not very big or seemingly unimportant. And the second word is that ruining which means to act corruptly, to bring on dysfunction, to break or to destroy. So if you look at that verse, it says, catch those foxes, those seemingly unimportant little foxes that are breaking and destroying and corrupting and bringing dysfunction into the vineyard. So we have to really be on guard for that, because it's rarely ever one catastrophic event that brings the demise of a marriage and a family. You don't go from here to here in one step. It's usually little bitty steps all along the way that get you from that marriage being a great deal to you wanting that new deal. So we have to watch for that. On the screens, we have a verse in Proverbs that I want to read to you that says this: I pass by the field of the sluggard and by the vineyard of the man lacking sense, and behold, it was completely overgrown with thistles. Its surface was covered with nettles, and its stone wall was broken down. When I saw, I reflected upon it, and I looked, and I received instruction. And this was the instruction: a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest. Then your poverty comes on you as a robber, and your want like an armed man. So Solomon learned early on that it was those little foxes, those little things that you really have to watch out for in marriage and in your family. Just this morning, I was reading in a devotion that I love by Paul David Tripp, and I'm kind of skipped ahead some because we're going to be going out of town, but it was just spot on with this, and this is what he says. We don't just live in big, important moments. We make only a few grand decisions in our entire lives. We live in little moments. So the character of our relationship isn't set by three or four big moments, but in the 10,000 little moments of life. So as we open up this morning, that's what we're going to be looking at. We're going to be looking at those four little foxes that we have want to share with you that can destroy the vineyard of your marriage and of your family.
Now, we could mention many, but we want to focus in on four. So what are the little foxes? Number one is the little fox known as unrealistic expectations. Watch out in marriage for the little fox of unrealistic expectations. I remember talking to a counselor friend of mine, Louis Miori, and he had done so much marriage counseling in his ministry. And I asked him, I said, Louis, I said, when couples come in and you counsel them, I said, what is kind of the number one thing that you find with them in terms of marriage problems? And he said, just didn't have to think about it that long. He said, unrealistic expectations. Why do people have so many marriage problems? Because they come into the marriage with unrealistic expectations. Debbie and I did a marriage conference in Dallas for about 950 people last week, and it was a great conference, and much prayer went into that conference, and you could tell because the people were so responsive. But one of the things that was said in that conference was this quote from Tim Downs, and he said this: one of the reasons marriage is so hard is because we go into it thinking it's going to be so easy. That's so true. People think they grew up listening to the Beatles, and the Beatles told them, all you need is love. You know, all you need is love. Love is all you need. And so they say, man, I feel a lot of love for you. And she says, well, I feel a lot of love for you. And they're like, well, let's get married because all you need is love. You need a whole lot more than just the feelings of love, right? You need commitment. You need resolve. You need stick-to-itiveness. So when the going gets tough, you don't just bail out. Unrealistic expectations, thinking it's going to be easy. Somebody described marriage this way. He says, like a window pane, flies on a window pane. Those that are on the outside are wanting to get in, and those on the inside are wanting to get out. That is the way some describe marriage. Oh, it's going to be so easy, and all of a sudden, it's not so easy. Hey, good marriages don't just happen. You have to work at marriage to make it good. And so the couples come in, unrealistic expectations. They think it's going to be easy, and it's not easy. But now they also not only have unrealistic expectations, they have differing unrealistic expectations. So let me share with you about the guy's unrealistic expectation that is different from his wife. He goes into marriage. See, women and men are different. A woman is so excited, she thinks her whole life about her wedding day. And it's a big deal for a woman about her wedding day. Guys don't think about the wedding day. They think about the wedding night. They're focused in on that. And so they go into marriage and they're thinking about physical intimacy in marriage. And they have this phrase, Christmas phrase, shop till you drop. I mean, they just like, man, that's what marriage is going to be. Now, she read Red Book Magazine. And Red Book Magazine said that couples, married couples, have sex 2.4 times a week on average. Nobody knows what 0.4 is, but 2.4 times a week. Well, you know what? He doesn't read Red Book. He reads Guinness Book of World Records. He's thinking 2.4. No way. I mean, we're going to set records here. So he comes into it with that kind of expectation. She doesn't have that kind of expectation, so it creates problems for them.
So what kind of expectations does she have when she comes into the marriage? She thinks back to that time when we were dating, and guys, you were just so into us, you know? You just wanted to be with us all the time. We would have these long conversations on the phone. We would have long conversations together where you really listened. Jeff even would go shopping with me. He hates to shop. In fact, the moment he walks into a store, it's like the very marrow in his bones is sucked out, and he's just exhausted. He's just, I've got to sit down, Debbie, I'm so tired. You know, but he would go shopping with me. You know, you courted us, you dated us, you cherished us, you doted on us all the time. And we go into marriage thinking it's going to stay just like that. Because we need to be cherished. We need to be loved. That's our number one need, is to feel loved. And so we need that. And what happens is that sometimes that just doesn't go that way. And sometimes you can think, because we can be independent and maybe we don't act like we need that, that we don't need it, but we do. Newsflash, men, we're so needy. Women, we're needy. We need you to make sure that we know how much you love us and that you spend time with us. So that box of unrealistic expectations, we have to really be on the lookout for that, and we have to be able to communicate through those differences that we have and through those different expectations that we have. But let's look at fox number two. Number two, watch out for the little fox of selfishness. Selfishness. Look at that verse in Philippians. Do nothing from selfishness or empty conceit, but with humility of mind, let each of you regard one another as more important than himself. Do not merely look out for your own personal interest, but also for the interest of others. I never really considered myself to be a real selfish person, honestly. And so I would think, you know, I don't really struggle with this making sure that someone else is more important than myself. I'm not always looking out for my own personal interest, or so I thought, until I got married. Wake up call. Then I realized, hey, wait a minute, I don't have anywhere to go from this person. I'm just kind of with them in this apartment, in this house all the time. And I am supposed to put their needs above my own. And it really reared its ugly head how selfish I was. And so I worked on that, and I felt like I had kind of gotten that under control. Patted myself on the back a little bit, because I was doing pretty good at this putting Jeff first thing. And so I thought, well, you know, I'm really not that selfish. You know, I thought I was a little bit, but I've worked on that, and God's really changed me. Or so I thought. Until baby number one arrived. And that was my biggest wake-up call to motherhood. Was not the sleepless nights, not the demands, all of that. It was that I was so selfish. Because it just awakened my heart to the selfishness that was within me. Because now, all of a sudden, this little bitty 7-pound living, breathing, screaming, eating, pooping thing was taking control of our home and definitely of my life. And I realized how selfish I was. And it was not a pretty thing.
Selfishness is not a pretty thing. I want you to look at the word selfishness. We have it up on the screens. Selfishness. Now look at the middle part of the word, fish. It stinks. And when you're selfish, you're not attractive. Nobody says they see somebody and like, oh, this is just this selfish pig. And they're like, oh, I'm just so attracted to you. I just love the selfishness about you. We're not attracted to selfish people. But newsflash, in and of ourselves, apart from Jesus Christ, we're all selfish. We all want what we want when we want it. That's just the core of fallen humanity. And so we have to fight against this thing called selfishness. Here's the problem in marriage and family. Selfishness robs the marriage of its romance. And you desperately need to have romance in your marriage so that the light doesn't go out on your marriage, so that it just doesn't become humdrum, blah, and passé. And so I have to work on my selfishness. Debbie has to work on her selfishness. And it's a constant daily battle. That's why every day when you get up as a believer in Jesus Christ, you have to surrender your life to Him. Do nothing from selfishness or empty conceit, but with humility of mind, let each of you regard one another as more important than himself. Debbie is more important than I am. My job as a husband is to meet her needs, and that's what I need to focus on. Her job as a wife is to meet my needs, and that's what she needs to focus on. And if I'm focused on meeting her needs and she's focused on meeting my needs, we do this. But when I say, hey, Debbie, you need to meet my needs, and she says, hey, Jeff, you need to meet my needs, we do this. And I'm waiting on her to come meet my needs, and she's waiting on me to come meet her needs, and everybody goes with no needs met because we are selfish at the core. So watch out for the little fox of selfishness. Number three, watch out for the little fox of misplaced priorities. See, that's a little fox that can so subtly get into the vineyard of love and chew it down to the roots.
So misplaced priorities. What should our number one priority be? Look at this verse in Matthew 6. It says this, "But seek first His kingdom and His righteousness, and all these things shall be added to you." So the number one priority that we have is our vertical relationship with God. That's where our power comes from. If we are not connected and in tune in that vertical relationship, we don't have the power to walk out our horizontal relationships, because in and of our flesh, we cannot do it. So our number one priority must be our relationship with the Lord. But when it comes to those horizontal priorities, God has a structure involved in that as well. And horizontally, our spouse is our first priority, then our children, then everything else, meaning our job, our recreation, our hobbies, all those other things. But in terms of our horizontal relationship, our spouse has to absolutely come first. And if we're not constantly on guard, number one, we will put God on a back burner. And when we do that, we can forget our horizontal relationships working right. So we have to make sure that we do that, because we don't want our homes to become child-centered. God designed our homes to be marriage-centered, not child-centered. And so it's important that we keep our spouse first, then our children, then our other things. I read in a publication once, in a major publication, this that says, "American parents shoot ourselves in the foot by making our children the center of our universe, and we certainly don't help our kids either. Child-centered families create anxious, exhausted parents and demanding, entitled kids who act out. We create healthy families and raise tomorrow's leaders if we focus on our marriages instead of on our children." We have to make that marriage a priority, because when we have a strong, solid marriage, we provide such stability for our children. And if you're looking around in this environment and culture we live in, they need something that's stable. And our marriages provide that for them. And when we're parenting, we have to take the long look. We can't just be so short-sighted that we do what's easy in the moment. We have to take the long look. Kids come into this world with one real big need, and that is to figure things out, to figure out how life works. And it's our job as a parent to teach them how life works. If we want our kids to be strong, successful, and emotionally healthy, the worst thing that we can do for them is to be over-involved, protect them from every obstacle that they face. Now, we have a picture that on the screen. I want you to look at this kid in bubble wrap, okay? We laugh, but sadly, in our culture, this is how a lot of people are parenting their children. They want to protect them from absolutely everything. So little Johnny is just walking around in the bubble wrap all the time. And that does not make for a healthy adult. Because in the adult world, when they leave your home, there's no more bubble wrap. There's no more bubble wrap there. So we have to make sure that we keep them able to understand that there are going to be some difficulties in life. We cannot protect them from absolutely everything. But oddly, this kind of parenting in our culture is praised. Oh, you're such a good mom, you're such a good dad, you're so involved in your kids' life, you're at everything that they do, and you just protect them from everything. And our culture kind of promotes that. And that is not God's design for how we were supposed to parent. There's a doctor, her name is Meg Meeker, and she writes a blog. And I read in a blog that she just did recently, which is on, the title of it was 5 Ways You Can Know If You're Overparenting. And I thought some of these were so good. Number one, your child calls you with every problem he encounters, looking for you to solve it. Now, that's okay if your kid's 6, 7, 8, but if you have an 18, 19, 20-year-old that's still calling you with every single problem that they have, wanting you to solve it, you might be overparenting. What about your child can't handle disappointment? Because you're always running in and fixing everything, so his feelings will not be hurt and he won't be sad. Or number three, your child avoids hard work. He's always looking for shortcuts, or he's looking for you to do the work for them. How many teachers we have in here? Quite a few. How many of you had projects turned in where you know the kid didn't do it? Okay, it's because parents want to jump in and do projects for their kids, and they want to do that. And we have got to prepare them to be healthy adults, because there's no bubble wrap in adulthood. And that's our job. It's our job to do that. And in so doing, here's just something that may revolutionize your life. We're not going to be their best friends. We're not. And that's not our job. Our job as parents is not to be our kids' bestie. That's not our job. Our job is to parent them. And parenting is not going to make you popular a lot of the time, because you're going to have to put the hammer down on things and they're not going to like it. You're going to have to discipline them. You're going to have to allow them to make mistakes. You're going to have to allow them to be disappointed and learn how to deal with disappointment. You're going to have to allow them to suffer consequences for decisions that they've made that maybe weren't good decisions. That's your job, and it's not going to make you very popular. But to earn the right to be their friends when they're older, you have to be their parent when they're young. You have to, because that's our job.
So that's the little fox, misplaced priorities. And the last little fox we want to talk about is the little fox that barely made the weight class. Because it's such a big issue, it's hard to call it a little fox. But it's the little fox of unresolved conflict. Unresolved conflict. Now, conflict is common in marriage. It's common in family. Somebody said, what is the best definition you've ever heard for conflict? It's this: two people. Two people. You put two people together, husband and wife, you're going to have conflict. Why? Because it's two sinners living under the same roof. And over some time, they add another couple of little sinners in there, and you just got a family of sinners. And so there's going to be conflict in that family because, what did we say? At the core of who a sinner is, he's selfish. And so no one walks with God perfectly. And so we struggle with this thing called I want what I want when I want it, the selfishness and yieldedness to Christ. And so you're going to have difficulty in marriage and in family. And home sweet home can become a conflict zone if you're not careful. Now, the goal of marriage is not to be conflict free. The goal of marriage is to handle conflict correctly. And so many people don't handle conflict correctly. Why? Because they never resolve conflict. The scripture says in Ephesians chapter 4, verses 26 and 27, be angry and yet do not sin. Do not let the sun go down on your anger, and do not give the devil an opportunity. Be angry, don't sin, don't let the sun go down on your anger, because if you do, you're going to give the devil an opportunity. Now, there's a progression when it comes to anger. What causes anger? Hurt causes anger. Every time you get your feelings hurt, and that goes unresolved, unresolved hurt produces anger. It always turns to anger. That's the flip side of the coin. You know, if you find a bear out in the woods and he's got a thorn in his paw, he's angry. You don't get near a bear with a thorn in his paw. I mean, you don't get near a bear anyway, but you definitely don't want to get near a bear like that that's wounded. Why? Because in his woundedness, he will come after you to try and take off your head because he's hurting. And hurting people hurt people. So unresolved hurt turns to anger, and unresolved anger turns to resentment and bitterness. When you don't deal with it, when you let the sun go down on your anger, what happens? You give the devil an opportunity. An opportunity to do what? An opportunity to drive a wedge in your marriage and in your family, a wedge of resentment and bitterness. And that happens in so many homes. And so, I mean, it's exciting, the wedding, we're throwing the bouquet, everything's going to be great, this is the ideal, and then real life hits and hard times hit, and the Beatles song, you flip it off of All We Need Is Love, and you start playing What's Love Got to Do With It. You know, I mean, you just switch it up, and it gets tough, and you get your feelings hurt. And you don't know what to do with that, and you let the sun go down on your anger, and then when you do that, you start to resent the other person. And ladies, let me tell you something. Something that you are bad at as a gender is not telling us as guys what we did to hurt your feelings. Because what do I hear so much of the time? He ought to know. He ought to know. I mean, how can he be so lame that he doesn't know? We don't know, okay? L for lame. We don't know. We're not trying to hurt you. We don't wake up in the morning and say, how can I hurt my wife today? We don't do that. Debbie is not my enemy. She's my teammate. But I sometimes hurt her feelings unknowingly. And so it helps me so much when she tells me. And she has a little story to tell about that.
Well, early in our marriage, even before we got married, we had talked through what the plan was going to be when we had children, and we had been in complete agreement that I was going to stay home with the kids. And so Jill comes around, and I'm staying home. I'm a stay-at-home mom, and even though that is exactly what I wanted to do, I truly was not prepared for what a huge adjustment that was going to be in my life. The time of being isolated and alone, struggling with feelings of just disappointment, of loneliness, of all those kinds of things. And so I just didn't understand it. And so I would look so forward each day to when Jeff got home from work. Number one, I'd think, I get a break. You know, I can maybe go to the bathroom by myself. Wouldn't that be fun? You know, I would think, I'll have some adult conversation. This is going to be wonderful. And so he would get home from work. He would have his 10 or 15 minutes to kind of unwind. We would have dinner. And then I started noticing that he was starting to leave and go play basketball with our neighbors. And the first couple of times he did it, I thought, well, that really just kind of hurts my feelings, you know? And I didn't say anything because, you know, I had worked on that whole selfish thing, you know, putting his needs first, And so I didn't say anything, but I noticed that I was just starting to get angry at him for doing that. And then I started noticing, you know, I think I'm even, maybe not even just angry, I'm kind of getting bitter that he's just leaving me alone after I've been alone all day. He's leaving me here again. And so we would have a discussion, you know, how that goes, and it didn't go well because he would end up getting so frustrated with me, right? Because yeah. He would think, what did you think? He thought.
I can't say.
Yeah, he can't. It really was rated G, I tell you what he thought. But he would end up making me feel horrible. He would make me think I was so selfish because I didn't let him go play basketball. And so it would just escalate and escalate and escalate, and it was just this spiraling down in our relationship, and he was getting frustrated with me because he felt like I was nagging him about it, and I was just getting more and more angry because I felt like I was like last on the list of things that he wanted to spend time with, and it really caused a lot of conflict. And I remember out of just desperation, praying one day, I said, Lord, how can he be this obtuse? I just don't understand how he's not getting this. But please help me. Help me figure out a way that I can talk to him and I can paint for him maybe an emotional word picture that will help him understand how his actions are hurting me.
So Debbie came up with this. And she had been trying to tell me, and I never got it. I just thought, why are you nagging me about this? I'm across the street, for heaven's sakes. I'm gone for an hour. I come back, and I'll be in better shape for later. And, so she told me, she said, Jeff, she said, if your friends all got together to play basketball one Saturday, and they didn't call you, all these guys that you play with and they left you out, she said, how would that make you feel? I was like, why would they do that? That would be so mean. That would be so rude. I said, why would they do that? And she said, well, how would it make you feel? And I said, well, it would hurt my feelings and I'd feel left out. And she looked at me and she said, uh-huh. And I said, do you mean that's what I'm doing to you? And she said, yes, and I got it. It went through the thickness of my skull, and I got it, and I was like, I was just so heartbroken that I made my wife feel that way, and all of a sudden, I was like, I am so sorry. I didn't know I was doing that, and I don't want to do that, and so please forgive me.
And it wasn't that he never played basketball again. Don't misunderstand. He continued to play that, but he didn't do it nearly as often, and he was much more sensitive to how I felt about it. So if it was a day that I just really needed him to be home that evening because I was exhausted, he wouldn't play, and he would never throw it in my face that he didn't get to play. But he still continued to play. We just were able to talk through it in a productive fashion.
Yeah, and using emotional word pictures in the communication is really helpful because you draw the other person in. How would this make you feel? Well, that's how I feel. And all of a sudden, as I said, I didn't marry Debbie to hurt her. I married her to love her. And so when I understood from her perspective, then I was able to make things right. And see, that's the thing about marriage and family. All couples, all families must major in forgiveness. Why? Because you're going to have conflict. You're going to get your feelings hurt. And so if you don't major in forgiveness, now forgiveness has two tentacles. If you're wrong, you seek forgiveness because you did something. I sought Debbie's forgiveness because I had hurt her feelings. And if you have been wounded, then you grant forgiveness. So seeking forgiveness, granting forgiveness, those two things have to be involved. And listen, communication is critical when you're talking things out. And one of the things, guys, in specifically with you, not exclusively guys, but it tends to be with guys, when your wife is trying to share with you that you've hurt her feelings, you can't get angry at her for sharing how you hurt her feelings, because then you hurt her feelings all over again, and then it's just like a cat chasing its tail. So anger shuts down communication. So you have to be able to receive, all right, I want to hear from you what's going on. And wives, you can help us a lot when you will not let the sun go down on your anger so that the resentment and bitterness doesn't set in. When my kids were little, there was a scripture verse that I said, this is going to be the verse for our house, Ephesians 4:32. And be kind to one another, tenderhearted, forgiving each other, just as God in Christ also has forgiven you. Catch for us the foxes, the little foxes that are ruining the vineyard while our vineyards are in blossom. The little fox of unrealistic expectations, the little fox of selfishness, the little fox of misplaced priorities, the little fox of unresolved conflict. And you say, that sounds great, but how? How do I do that? How do I have the power to do that? How do I have the power to forgive my husband, my wife, for something terrible that they did? And make sure that you distinguish forgiveness and trust are not the same thing. Forgiveness is granted, trust is earned. But you say, how do I forgive? How do I have the power to do that? Remember this word, willpower. Willpower. We talk about that with dieting. How are you going to diet? I got to have willpower. Here is willpower in the Christian life. You provide the will, God provides the power. You don't have the power. You can't white knuckle your way to a good marriage. Unless the Lord builds the house, they labor in vain that build it. But what you can do is say, Lord, I want to go your way. I want to follow you. I have decided to follow Jesus, no turning back, no turning back. And so with my will, I'm giving it to the Lord. I'm surrendering by an act of my will, my life to Jesus. You provide the will, he provides the power. And you know what's interesting? Ephesians chapter 5 and 6, they talk about family relationships. It talks about a husband and a wife. Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church. Wives, see to it that you respect your husband. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Fathers, do not exasperate your children, provoke them to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. So it has commands for husbands, commands for wives, commands for kids, commands for parents. How do you do all that stuff with marriage and family? Before it ever gives those commands, it gives the key command. And do not be drunk with wine, for that is dissipation, but be filled with the Spirit. We have to be filled with the Holy Spirit of God. And that comes when you surrender your life to Jesus. You do it to be saved. You do it every day to walk with him. I don't surrender my life to Jesus to be saved every day, but every day I have to say, Lord, you who live in me, live through me. I surrender my life anew and afresh to you. I want you to live on the throne of my life. I want you to fill me with your Spirit so that I can forgive, I can grant forgiveness, so that when I'm wrong, I can humble myself and seek forgiveness, so I can nail my selfish nature to the cross of Jesus Christ so that I can walk in the power of the Holy Spirit and be the husband and the dad that you want me to be, the wife and the mom that you want me to be. Hey, you provide the will and he provides the power. And God's power is available today and he's waiting for you to take a step with your will in his direction.
You've been listening to Pastor Jeff Shreve of First Baptist Church, Texarkana, and From His Heart Ministries. For a complete listing of Pastor Jeff's messages, check out our website at fromhisheart.org.